to another episode of We the People Radio. Having some microphone drama here.
I know, I saw it.
Every time I pull it down, it goes flying up to the ceiling. And, yeah, it was a stunt made for not radio.
No.
So, my name's Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill, kind of.
Are you Bill?
Yeah,
today?
I am Bill today, Aaron. Our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They have everything you need when it comes to John Deere. Spring's right around the corner, so get in there and see them. They've got lots of tractors on hand, lots of mowers. If they don't have it, they can get it to you in short order. So go by and see them. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake. Or you can give them a call at 530-226-9226. Or go to the web at papemachinery.com. That's the interweb now.
Yeah.
I don't know where that came from, but
I know.
Kind of bugs me. Yeah. Go to the interweb.
So he says it.
Yeah.
As opposed to the outer web. Oh, my goodness. So we've got Officer Joe and Kathy. I have trouble with my chair now. I've got a lot of problems with a lot of different things today. What? You want your sound turned up? Today is Hand Signal Day. Welcome to Hand Signal Day. It is the 19th of February, 2023, and I'm positive we will replay this program at some point in the future because, unfortunately, the topic isn't going away. Wouldn't it be great if it was, though?
Well, it would be great if people would just wake up and listen.
That's what I mean.
And take it seriously.
Yeah, and we could stop having it. So for all the people who think that the proliferation of marijuana and the cannabis joyride with tax revenue and CBD and hemp and blah, 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 that all goes with it, if you think it doesn't affect you, today's the day. Today's the day when you'll figure out that, hey, guess what? It could reach out and touch you at any minute. Just absolutely any minute.
Yeah, touch you hard.
So before I introduce Laura, got anything?
So, hi, Officer Joe.
Look at that.
Hey, we have successes to report, which is Susanville, California, and we stopped a pro-cannabis city council from turning that into what they wanted to make was the mecca of cannatourism for Northern California, and the citizens up there became active and stopped it and had a successful vote, and so there will be no commercial cannabis this year in Lassen County. In Siskiyou County, we had a meeting with the California Department of Health, three heads from the California Department of Health. I'd like to tell you that it went well. In that meeting was the assistant district attorney for Siskiyou County, their marijuana expert, their chief health officer, their chief code enforcement officer, the sheriff, and myself and a number of concerned citizens. And when the state arrived and saw that the county employees and myself were there, they refused to meet with us until we left the room. And Aaron, you were there as well, so you understand. And we all had to step out.
Yep. They felt like people from the congressman's office didn't need to be there either. You know, really nobody needed to be there.
So that's our
state. Don't need any witnesses to what's going on with the state of California.
So we're not stopping with them, Aaron. We're hot on them right now. So we're staying on the state.
Yeah. So, I mean, because people are told that this is going to be tax revenue
and
you know, improve the community and provide programs for kids or whatever, all other crazy stuff.
Well, and this is the misnomer to me is – any nonprofit that this is one of, you know, especially when you work with youth, why would I take money from marijuana tax dollars? Like, why? There is
sell drugs to help kids.
Yeah,
great idea.
Yeah, I'm like, it's stupid to even think that we would even do that. So.
Today we have Laura Stack, who is our friend and whom we support highly, and she's from Colorado, and she will report, and there is a report out of Colorado that shows for every $1 that a cannabis dispensary takes into a community, the community actually spends $4.50 in all the hidden costs in the lost work hours, the amount of people that have to go to the hospital for hyperemesis and emesis and all those kind of...
uncontrolled barfing, for those of you who don't. To speak hyper
yeah,
whatever it is.
Emesis, right. And for all the other problems, higher workman's compensation, losses, higher employee theft, higher worker sick out, if you can get people to even come to work anymore.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's the biggest issue is nobody wants to work.
Well, and if they do, they can't pass the drug test. So let's tell people, Laura, if you are unfamiliar with Johnny's Ambassadors and their founder, Laura Stack, she had flown 2 million miles all over the world as a time management expert and a best-selling author of 8 books until her world suddenly changed on November 20th, 2019, when her 19-year-old son, Johnny, died by suicide after he became psychotic from dabbing high THC marijuana concentrates. She responded by forming a nonprofit, Johnny's Ambassadors, to educate teens in schools all over the U.S. about the dangers of marijuana, on adolescent brain development, mental illness, and suicide. Johnny's story has been told in People Magazine, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, PBS, and on Dr. Phil. Laura's on a crusade to recruit thousands of Johnny's Ambassadors to get teens to stop dabbing.
1 in 7 are at risk in our own community for committing suicide. Our teens say that marijuana is the easiest drug to obtain, far easier than alcohol. 39% of our hospital admissions test positive for high-potency THC. 25% of our females, 15 to 24, use cannabis during their pregnancy, thereby stoning the unborn. They have less birth weight. They have lots of psychological problems later in life, and Laura's going to speak to that, and we are very fortunate to have her today.
Thanks for jumping on with us today, Laura. Where would you like to start?
Thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity to be here and echo everything you have said. And yes, we have shared that journey with you here in Colorado for the past 10 years. We legalized recreational marijuana the same year you all did. So
it seems like it kind of got off track for you guys faster than it did for us. Why? I don't know. Maybe we just heard more about your state, it seems.
Well, you know, it just, everything kind of went off the rails, I think. And forgive my voice, please. I did the 6 high school presentations in 2 days, so in Upper State New York. So I'm trying to recover from that. But, you know, I think we thought as voters, the more parents I talk with here in Colorado who are just stunned when I give, you know, presentations, let's say community nights or parent nights, you know, I always say, but you voted for this. You know, you kind of, don't you feel in some ways that, you know, we get what we deserve? And you know, many of them say, I had no idea this was what we were voting for.
Yeah.
You know,
I
was voting for what I thought I used when I was a teen in the 80s. You know, and that's not an excuse for me, but as way of explanation, you know, I used marijuana when I was 17 or 18. You know, it was like Jim's basement weed. And, you know, when Johnny told me, my son at 14, that he had used marijuana at a high school party, he had a friend whose brother was 18 at the time and had a medical marijuana card. And, you know, he said he used it. That's what I thought he meant. You know, I kind of put my perception, my experience of marijuana, which was, you know, roll it in a piece of paper, share it with your other 6 friends, giggle a little bit, and go get breakfast at Denny's. Like, that's my only recollection of using marijuana, and I didn't really like it, and I didn't use it after that. So I had no idea, no concept that this was even happening in the industry. I didn't know the weed was any different. I didn't know anything about dabbing and shatter wax, edible vapes. I didn't know any of that. So in my head, I kind of said, you know, well, it's just weed. You know, I used it. I'm fine. Didn't hurt me.
See, that's the bad part, because, yep, you know, don't you notice that the age group that thinks that, they're, yeah, all the people that are in elected office making the decisions.
They're people who are our age. They're, yep, not the, yep, kids. It's,
right,
like,
They don't have a clue.
And I really think Colorado, you know, when I talk to people, I'm giving a program tonight at a church for 100 people in a town down the street, and it's going to be the same thing. You know, I asked them, how many of you thought you were voting for this stuff? They're just on the ground, just shocked. And, you know, they don't take tours of dispensaries. They don't go in and take pictures of this stuff like I do. So, you know, I'll spend the rest of my life telling people that I was just so very wrong and ignorant. And really, I think we are doing our kids such a disservice, you know, sacrificing what we think are profits, which aren't, you know, on the altar of their public health. They're our kids. You know, we're going to lose generations of our teens to this stuff, sadly.
Well, and I don't think we're just losing the teens. I think adults that started young and have gotten into this, we're, you know, the suicides have just skyrocketed of people that you go, oh, my God.
They say, you know, I didn't even, this stuff is, oh, my gosh, this isn't the stuff we used to have. And why can't they have the stuff we used to have? You know, people who started using at my age, but then continued, you know, they complain. This stuff's like diesel fuel. It's narcotic strength. It's they don't even like it.
And that's what when we talk to youth, or especially when I talk to youth, I always say, let's compare this. You know, we're not starting out at beer. We're starting out at moonshine. So when you start using what's on the market today for pot or dabs or anything, you went straight to the moonshine. You didn't even slow down for a sip of beer. And
it's crazy. It's like the doctor saying, here, have a pack of cigarettes, smoke this and you'll feel better, and come back and see me in the morning. We're sending kids to use these drugs that is under this guise, this farce of
medicine, and
they're so confused about this. And
yeah,
it's like Coors Light. You know, we have Coors Light here in Colorado, 4.5 or whatever it is. Or, you know, just have a fifth of Everclear.
No
big deal.
And what could go wrong?
Yeah, so they really don't understand. And it's not just the potency. You know, it's explaining to people what the dose is. I think that's been one of the keys for us is, you know, they don't know what 1-3% THC back in the 60s looks like.
Nope.
Nobody understands that versus, you know, what is a 35% THC flower? Like, how much are you actually ingesting in terms of THC? I think, you know, when you show the math, we spend a lot of time doing math with teens when we speak at school assemblies. We talk a lot about science, a lot about math. They didn't know they were going to have to do that in a school assembly. But, you know, they realize, oh, my gosh, one dab today is equivalent to 50 Woodstock joints if you smoked them all by yourself.
Wow.
Like, putting it into perspective, how much is that? You know, how much am I actually getting? And it's shocking. I think we have to really lay it out in plain English for people to understand the difference.
Well, and then when you put it in edibles, how do you even track any of that?
Well, edibles, you explain.
You don't know what you're getting.
Well, you know, in Colorado, they try to define a serving size as 10 milligrams. So everything, which, you know, is the equivalent of two joints from when I was a kid. Now, what's 10 milligrams? What does that even mean?
A 10 milligram edible will, like, have you out.
Exactly. That, like,
here's our resident 19-year-old. No, thanks.
I hate the way weed makes me feel, which is whatever. Like, I have friends who do.
No, but you're exactly in the demographic.
My first experience with weed was some dispensary stuff, and I was I was out all night.
And that's legal stuff. Black market ditch weed, you know, laced with something bad weed. That's dispensary weed. Mm-hmm. You know, you legally bought an illegal dispensary. It's legal.
Well, if you ask any kid, like dispensary weed is like a thing. Like, it's just, it's insane. It's like super, it's potent. Like, everyone knows that, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean,
Laura, we interviewed Ann Hassel. Erin had her on the show.
She's so great.
She's great. And Ann said, you know, as a bud tender, she said, they told us anything less than 90% pure THC, we couldn't sell. So the dispensaries they don't want it. They don't want anything that's lower grade, which is why we think that it will never pass FDA approval. Not any kind of traditional FDA approval. I don't care who Biden puts in there and puts on the FDA to head the FDA. Unless they change the regulations completely, it can't pass.
Well, and I really believe these people don't want it legalized.
No.
Because they do not want to be under control.
Because right now, Laura, we can assume, but assuming is always bad. Here in California, they've got, the Cannabis Control Board, and, they're spending, who knows how many gazillions of dollars on, the Cannabis Control Board that does nothing. So when you have... when you have problems and you go to them, they bat their eyelashes at you and like, what?
We're
working on it. Actually, I don't even know if they tell us that. But in Colorado, same deal?
Well, it's the Marijuana Enforcement Division.
Oh, okay.
Conveniently called MED.
Yeah.
It's the fox in the hen house, just like it is there, marijuana industry people regulating the industry or lack of it.
Right.
There were, thousands of where they send in someone to audit the liquor store, but I think there were 32 total for last year audits. So,
in a whole state.
And this is, it's just the Wild West out here. This stuff is unabated, it's unregulated, it's untested. I mean, Vermont is the only state in the country that even is attempting to put a cap on this stuff, and they're even fighting that. And they're at 30% flower, 60% concentrate, which just makes me laugh. It's like, what kind of cap is that?
That's not going to keep it out of their state. I mean, my God, they're just going to bring it in. So,
well, I'm kind of the mind, I wish there was some kind of cap. I mean, anything's better. 60%'s got to be better than 90%, but then they just use more,
Well, and the thing is, so what? You set a cap. Who's going to go in and test it?
Right.
And is the MED going to do it? Of course they're not.
No.
Yeah. Your black market is just exploding in all these areas where they've legalized it. We have to take a really quick break, but we will come back with our guest, Laura Stack. She is with Johnny's Ambassadors. Everything is on the web at wethepeopleradio.us.
When they move into your neighborhood, they take over, but good.
Yes, bad medicine indeed. So we were chatting with Liam on the break, and he was saying that, once we started putting it in dispensaries, it just made it all much more...
accessible.
Yeah, accessible. Okay, so did it overtake... it was just where I lived, but when I was a kid in Connecticut, drinking age was 16. So we were all drinking it like 14 because it was really easy to get, beer and stuff. That was super simple. Mm-hmm. Once they legalized marijuana, did you see any switch there?
Me?
Yeah. Because you were in high school during that time period.
Yeah.
Junior high.
Yeah. I mean, everyone has an older sibling that has a med card, a green card. I don't even know if you need that anymore.
No.
No, you don't?
No.
See,
not unless you're under 21.
Okay.
Well, and that leads me to my next question, because Laura touched on it, and I want her to expand on it, which is, how are our youth getting this marijuana, and are they getting it through straw purchases, Laura?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, any high schooler in any of our schools, because I visit them, I mean, they can get marijuana in 5 minutes. I mean, everybody knows who the seniors are, who are 18, you know, who have their, quote, medical marijuana cards. We call them red cards here. But, you know, it's very well known. And I know this, sadly, because it happened to my son when he went to his first party at 14. And, you know, here it was legalized, same as there, 2012. And then it hit our dispensaries in 2014. I remember that because he was a freshman in high school and went to his first party. And, you know, we always had the same rules, you know, parents do, no drinking, no drugs, no smoking, no marijuana. And I just kind of assumed he would follow the rules. You know, I grew up in a day we were more afraid of our parents than we were of the police. Like, they, you know, they tell you that's the rule, and you know, that's it.
Yeah.
You know, I just didn't think it was a question, you know. But he went to this party, and his friend had a brother who was 18, and he said, Mom, you know, Dad, there was a guy with a card, and all the boys wanted to try to get high, and I knew, you know, that I shouldn't do it, and I'm not supposed to, but I didn't know what to do, and I didn't know what to say. They handed it to me and said, hit this, and I did, and he felt guilty about it, and I told him, you know, don't ever do that again. It'll destroy that brain of yours. He had a perfect SAT score in math. He was a genius in math, 800 out of 800. And sadly, when he became 18, unbeknownst to us, without our permission or knowledge, he got a med card, and we only found out about it because after he died, we have a friend who is a cybersecurity expert who helped us get into his devices, and we found his login and all his information on the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment, which is an oxymoron. And he, in his phone that we found in Snapchat, it just broke my heart, hundreds of photos of him dealing. And now here he is, full circle. You know, he got his first drugs from a dealer at 18, and now here he is. He's the dealer. And, you know, they call it the gray market. It's not the black market. They legally buy it, legal card, legal dispensary, legal drugs, and then they turn around and they sell it to their friends. There were hundreds of photos of all his wax and shatter and doubt, everything he was selling on Snapchat. And probably 13, 14-year-old boys. Just broke my heart. I don't know who they are or if they're okay. But, you know, it's really hard to get alcohol here. But it's very easy to get marijuana. You know, you only have to be 18. It's 21 for everything else. But, you know, they go to our pot shop docs, as we call them. And luckily, with the legislation we passed a year ago, 1317, regulating marijuana concentrates, this has been controlled somewhat because, you know, Johnny had no medical issues, zero. Perfectly healthy. Like, there was no condition that he had that would have been considered, you know, chronic and debilitating that would have warranted a medical card. You know, the kids here, the doctors give it to them, a few hundred bucks, you know, oh, I got a migraine, oh, I got a hangnail, my back hurts. Here, you need a med card for that. You know, and we had 6,000 18-year-olds in April of 2015, just a few years after that, with these med cards, and it's come down to now there's only 2,000. So we know our regulations are working. You know, we know that Colorado, you know, being one of the first to accept it, was the first to say, okay, this is bad, and we need to keep this out of the hands of our teens, because that's exactly what's happening, Cam. It's just, they were looping from one dispenser to the next, to the next, to the next, buying their maximum 40 grams. 40 grams!
Is that the regulations that were put into effect, was the amount they could buy?
Well, that's just a tiny piece of it, but yes, now 2 grams a day, and then now there's a tracking system where before it wasn't tracked. They just went, they could go to 10 dispensaries and buy the max, and then take it back and sell it, and now they can only get 2 a day, and it's tracked. And so we know that there's less marijuana in our schools, and so that's a huge win. You know, now we have to have 2 doctors who independently certify that the teen has a chronic and debilitating condition. They have to put their name on it. They're just not, they're not willing to do it anymore. They have to state what they're supposed to use, how much, how often, what the dose is. And no doctor is willing to do this. They also have to pull their medical health records and their mental health records. So we're seeing drastic cuts in youth use here just in the past year since it went into effect in January of 22. So it's a wonderful thing that's happened.
Well, let me talk about the difference that happened here, Laura.
Yeah, that's what I was curious. What's happening in California?
Well, we had pot docs showing up from San Francisco. I know of one who would fly up here. She would fly up here twice a week on her private plane, and she would see 50 patients in a day, and they would all get their marijuana card. And she made so much money at it that she was able to buy that private plane and transport herself up here. So our system isn't working like Colorado, and our dispensaries, you're supposed to have seed to sale where we're supposed to track everything. And I always point out the window, the front door of our Board of Supervisors, up toward the mountain and say, that's where the marijuana is coming from that's going in those dispensaries. And the dispensaries here have actually admitted that they have to take black market marijuana into their dispensaries to be, financially feasible for them in any way. I know that there's much more to the story. And by the way, you have a book, and I'd like you to talk about that too. And people should know that your book is an incredible journey into the psychosis that comes from illegal marijuana, but also the trail of tears that are left behind by the people that are affected by, in your case, the death of Johnny. Johnny was a beautiful human being, and I'd like you to talk a little bit more about him if you could.
Yeah, I mean, I always love to talk about Johnny. He was a wonderful person, and I always let people know right up front, you know, that he wasn't depressed, he wasn't anxious, he didn't have any mental illnesses, he wasn't trying to self-medicate. Everybody always jumps right to, you know, oh, poor kid, they're stressed, they're having mental health issues, they're medicating with marijuana. No, my kid was awesome. He had no problems until he started using marijuana, and then, you know, years later he became anxious and depressed and psychotic, but he was very involved in school. He ran cross country, ran track, he played the piano, he played the guitar, he was very engaged, had a ton of friends, great sense of humor, a wonderful smile. He was just such a handsome young man and warm and caring, a loyal friend. He had a lot of friends. We were a Christian family. He was raised in the church. He loved Jesus. We taught Sunday school for many years. We have an older daughter and a younger son, and the five of us taught a four-year-old class, and he loved kids. He was great with kids, and you know, grew up in Bible Blast and youth group and Awanas and all those programs, and was so smart, had a 4.0 GPA, loved school, and had a scholarship to Colorado State University. You know, he could have done anything he wanted with his life. And when I do school assemblies, I show the kids a video of him, 1 minute video, like a montage of his life, you know, from younger to his death, so they can just see, wow, God, you know, he's just like me. He's just a great kid. He's just a normal kid, and it can happen to anybody. And you know, people just say, how can that happen to you, Laura? How can that happen to your son? It's like, well, you know, why am I so special? It can happen to anybody. You give them marijuana, it changes them. And
you weren't a helicopter mom. You were fully invested in Johnny's life. I know, because I read that in your book. You know,
I mean, well, we spent over $200,000 trying to help him. There was no Johnny's ambassadors when I was having problems with Johnny. There was nowhere to turn. Insurance didn't think it was addictive. You know, they didn't want to pay for anything. There were no treatment programs. The ones we tried were a disaster. They put him in one program with, you know, other all ages drug users, and they mocked him and they made fun of him. Here he's this 18-year-old kid addicted to marijuana, and they're like, I'm a heroin user and you're weak-minded. And he cried. I mean, it was terrible. They didn't have any help for him. There was a program in one center that said, well, you need to lie. You need to say that you're hooked on LSD, and then they'll pay for it.
Wow.
It's like, what? He goes, I'm not going to say I'm hooked on LSD. You know, I'm addicted to marijuana. And when he stopped using, he would recover. He would be sober for 3 and 4 months at a time. And we always used to say it was like an alien came and took Johnny and then put another kid there. And he became verbally abusive and defiant and isolated himself in his room. He withdrew from all activities that he loved. He stopped going to school. He got 4 D's his senior year, his last semester. And this was a kid, you know, who never got a B in his life. And still graduated with honors, 3.2, because his GPA was so high. He was just such a wonderful person, and it took 5 years from that fateful party to his death. And Johnny, unfortunately, became one of those that got very suspicious and very paranoid. It doesn't happen to everybody, but it increases your odds fivefold when you use this high-potency crap that you start to experience really delusional thinking, and he thought people were after him and that people were watching him and that everybody knew about him, and he became incredibly paranoid that the mob was going to get him and that the FBI, he was on the FBI list and that his phone was bugged. I mean, he would just say the most outrageous things, and we, what are you talking about? And we still didn't understand until pretty close to the end, about a year and a half before he died, that it was the marijuana that was doing it. We went and got him genomine tested. We thought, oh, my God, he's developing some kind of, like, schizophrenia. And we don't have anything like that in our genes, in any side of our families. Several generations back, we didn't know what. He didn't have any markers, didn't test for anything, COMT gene, ATK1 gene, all these, nothing. And so the mental hospital, they diagnosed him with, his diagnosis was THC abuse severe. That's what was wrong with him.
And Laura, I know from reading your book and from talking to you, because you're my friend, I know that, and by the way, I'm honored to be your friend. I know
that. Me too. Thanks, Cam.
Yeah. I know that you tried every single technique, every single parental technique that's ever possible in the gamut of techniques, including tough love. I know there was an incident with a family dog. Maybe you could speak to some of that so that the families that are out there in our community that are listening to this.
Hold on before we start that. Let's take a quick break and come back so we don't have to interrupt.
Okay.
Because I think that is a huge thing. Because, you know, a lot of times people want to think that the parents aren't involved.
I only got time for a couple of beers and a jukebox song ringing in my ear. The next thing you know, the bartender's pouring, shots are flowing, got me stoning. All I really know is that I should be going, but I'm soaking up the moment. I'm all jacked up, all jacked up. Don't believe I've ever had this much. One thing I've learned, when you get tore up, time sure flies when you're all jacked. Well, let me get to the point. Let's roll another joint and turn the radio to laugh. I'm too alone to be proud, and you don't know how it feels. You don't know how it feels to be me.
Yeah.
So are we back with Laura?
Yep.
Laura, before I let you go again and tell the story of Johnny, I do want to just illuminate that there are numerous suicide hotlines, and we'll give out one if anyone needs help in the community. And you can dial nationally 988. And I believe Aaron said that you can also use 211 in our local area, and help is available. And there is a California-based prevention program for people that they can get help, and parents can get help, and it's called Maranon, and So that's a friend run by a friend of Laura's and mine and Kathy's and Aaron's, a man named Bart Bright. And there's thousands of families here in California that use that service. It's like Al-Anon and Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the same program, but it's specifically for marijuana. So
excellent.
Back to you and your beautiful son. I know you tried Tough Love at one point. That's in your book. And what's the name of your book again, Laura? Could you tell us?
Yes, you're right. And you've probably seen it all, Officer Joe, in your line of work also. But, you know, you get to the point as a parent where, you know, you can't figure out, you know, is this normal teen stuff? Because teen boys are irritable anyway, and they sleep a lot anyway. And, you know, you're trying to separate what is drug use and what is just a normal teen stuff. But, you know, at some point, you realize it's just it's not normal stuff, and it's part of what, you know, we discovered was drugs. After he got his med card at 18, he was just out of control. He was still in high school, and, you know, we had our younger son at home still, and so this was a very volatile environment. He became abusive. And he would say horrible things to me, and I, you know, loved him more than anyone in the world. And he was, you know, saying just horrible, foul things, you know, right in front of his brother. And my husband's a second-degree black belt, so this was not going over very well. And he stopped going to school. He refused to do any chores. He would vape his THC, his pen, his dab pen. He was fond of wax and vape oil, and he would do that in the house. And so, you know, he just was out of control, and he had a therapist, you know, had a program. He was in counseling. You know, we were trying all of that, and we didn't quite know what to do, but then he decided for us at 18, he said, well, I'm leaving. I'm 18, and I'll use marijuana if I want to. You can't stop me, and I don't have to go to school because I'm an adult. And he took us off of his parent portal. He took us off of his therapist consent, off of the university. When he, you know, got to the university at CSU, we couldn't get any information. Couldn't talk to the psychiatrist. You know, he just totally put us out of his life. And when he said, I'm leaving, we didn't argue. You know, I think that was the ultimate in tough love. It was it had been 4 years at that point of hell, basically, trying to get him help and over this addiction. And, you know, at some point we realized you can't control another human being. You know, he needs to want help, and he didn't. You know, he said he loved marijuana and that he was going to use it for the rest of his life. And, well, he did. And so we let him leave. And he took $5,000 that he had saved of his own money in his own savings account that he was supposed to take to college, that he'd earned in jobs and, you know, presents allowance, everything in his life. And we didn't know this. But, you know, we found out later after he died, that he had bought all kinds of legal dispensary products with it, and someone stole his stash. So he was all of a sudden out of money. We weren't paying for him to rent the bedroom in the house that he was renting. We paid for his insurance for his car so he could get to school, and his phone so we could talk to him. And that was it. And he didn't have any money, and he didn't have any drugs. And so he came over when we were gone one evening, and our son James was here by himself, and he was a senior in high school at the time. And he said, I want to see the dog. And she came to the door, Lily, my dog, and he called her and took her. And he called, he texted my husband that evening, and he said, you need to give me money to pay for my rent, or I'm going to kill the dog. And I mean, we had no doubt that he actually would. I mean, he was that volatile. We had locks on our bedroom doors by this point. You know, all the knives hidden. He got into a physical altercation with my younger son, who is bigger than him. My younger son's more of an athlete type versus a brainiac. And so we didn't doubt that he probably would kill my dog. And so I did. I caved. I went and I gave the homeowner his rent for the month, $800. And he gave me the dog back. And it's that. And that's just one of, I mean, just countless. Yeah, the book was 300 pages, as you know, Joe. It's, you know, just recounting everything that happened. He died right before Thanksgiving of 2019, and then it was COVID. You know, you all remember that coming about early 2020, and we were isolated and we were alone, and it was just, it was awful. You know, I was basically in a fetal position for about 6 months, just my failure, just inability to save my son. And so I just started writing, you know, because, well, I didn't have anything else to do with COVID. And 300 pages, his story. I was worried that I was going to forget everything that had happened. And it's pretty gripping.
In your book, Laura,
it's pretty graphic.
I have written on the first page, it says, on the first page of your book, I wrote to myself, I said, I will never forget, Laura. And that book is The Dangerous Truth About Today's Marijuana by you.
Yeah.
And it is an absolutely gripping story. I know that you've told me more, and I think about death notifications I've had to do as a policeman in my life. And, you know, you kind of divorce yourself. But I wonder about the policeman that came to your house that night. Could you describe that to me and what happened?
Yeah, it's funny because that officer, actually, I am in touch with because I spoke at a school here where we are in Douglas County, Colorado, and there was a school resource officer there who said, you know, that's the best presentation I've ever seen on marijuana, and he introduced me to the chief, who introduced me to the sergeant there who was in charge of all the school resource officers, and so I ended up going and doing a train-the-trainer to teach them my materials, just like you have, Joe, to go and teach in their schools. And that officer was there. And so it was very emotional, you know, at the meeting. He told his story, and I told mine, you know, and to see where those two worlds align was just, it's just heartbreaking. You know, he was the first one on the scene. He was at the door, and it was late. We'd gone to bed at, I don't know, 10:30, something like that, and about 1 o'clock, my cell phone rang, and I thought it would be Johnny. It always was. I kept my cell phone up on high because he'd be in some sort of trouble, and instead it said Douglas County Sheriff's Office, and I answered, and I said, do you have Johnny with you? And he said, no, ma'am, I'm sorry, I don't. And it just hit me, and I just felt just this cold chill go through me, and I just knew something was very, very wrong. And I woke up my husband, and we ran downstairs, and there was a woman there in black and a Douglas County sheriff's officer, the one I met. And we just kind of instinctively let them in and just sat down knowing there's something very wrong. And we just said, what happened? You know, is he okay? And the woman in black said, Mr. and Mrs. Stack, I'm with the coroner's office, and I'm so sorry to tell you that your son is deceased. And we just couldn't even believe it. I said, what do you mean? I mean, that's what a question, right? Your son is deceased. That was my first question. What do you mean? I was just very confused by this. And she said, he's dead, ma'am. He jumped off the top of the RTD parking garage in Lone Tree, just a couple miles from where we live. And it's just the worst day of my life. You know, I still picture that day. We never thought, you know, that he would do it. He did have one prior suicide attempt. He tried to kill himself about 14 months before that here in our house, and he was unsuccessful, but he had told me he was going to kill himself, and I guess I just kind of thought that he would tell me again, and he didn't. He took his life, and then 3 days later, we found a journal in his apartment that he had written in, and it said, "The mob is after me, and the FBI is after me. Everybody knows about me," and I could just see all the delusional ranting in his brain. So we don't know. I mean, we'll never really know what he was thinking or why. But clearly, he had some sort of psychotic episode and some sort of attack. There's a video of him. They asked me if I wanted to see it. We said no, of course. But the camera at the parking garage caught him dying, killing himself, and it showed him as if he thought he could fly, like with the posture and the mannerism of someone that thinks they can just take off from the side of a building and fly. And so some people looked at that and they said, you know, clearly that maybe he thought that he was magic, that he could fly and that maybe he wouldn't die. So, yeah, just it ruined his mind. And it took his life. I am 100% sure if he hadn't used marijuana that day that he would still be here. He was a great kid. He made some bad choices, including using marijuana. And he got addicted to it. But, you know, he's a victim. He should have never had access to this stuff in the first place.
I have to make a comment here, too. Just like cigarettes, you know, we went after the tobacco companies. Just like alcohol, we go after the bars that overserve somebody. But why? I just don't understand this. Why we're not going after the dispensaries and the dealers?
Well, it's legal.
Well, I know, but so is alcohol. So is cigarettes.
Well,
those are all legal.
The Colorado Constitution changed the law. It's in our Constitution that, you know, they have a legal right to purchase this stuff. I talked to several attorneys. They said he had a legal card. He bought legal weed. He bought it in a legal dispensary. No rules were broken. The dispensaries, you know, were within their right to sell him this stuff. And I'm like, why can we even make this poison? How can we even create 80%
right.
wax? And,
right.
you know, you can't even have Juul's flavored e-cigarettes, but you can have...
Yeah, we're worried about that as a gateway.
Yeah,
as
and we
a
can have 90% potency vape. I did try. Attorney would take it.
We're going to get slammed here by the news, Laura. We're going to come back with you. You have 5 minutes to grab some coffee and stuff. We will be right back. Our guest is Laura Stack. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. February 19th, 2023. My name is Aaron Ryan.
My name is Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery. They're our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. If you're looking for a tractor or a mower or need your old tractor freshened up, go up and see them. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake, and they've got a real good service staff up there that can get you in and out right now. It's a great time to get all your work done before spring, because once spring springs, you're going to be
waiting
to get things fixed up. So go up and see them, or give them a call at 530-226-9226. And you can also catch him on the web at papemachinery.com.
Duh. All right. So we have kind of a, well, it's not kind of a serious topic. It is a serious topic. I guess most of our topics are serious, but this one's kind of a, you know, I mean,
it's probably this emotional.
This is
real.
Yep.
This is real, real life.
Yep. So back to Kathy, because Kathy has traveled in the same circle as our guest, Laura Stack, from Johnny's Ambassadors. And I really hope that you go on the website and look at the connections to their site and follow some of this, because if you're not involved in this, you know somebody who is, and they need resources before their story turns out like this.
So my story is a little different, but I think my comments before the break were, I don't understand. You know, we go after the bars that serve alcohol for DUI drivers, or we go after the cigarette industry because it causes cancer. But when it comes to marijuana, we do not go after the dealers. We do not go after the pot shops. And this brings me home to, all right, gotta do this without crying, but
I won't look at you.
I know, don't look at me.
Okay.
My son's birthday is Tuesday, and he should have been 37 years old. But he was killed by a DUI driver when he was 15. And I look at what Laura went through and what I have gone through, and what we're trying to do is you have to turn these tragedies into something positive, something that makes a positive impact on our communities, whether it has to do with pot or alcohol or just keeping our kids alive, for crying out loud. And that's the message that you have to walk away with, is we're just trying to educate people and be aware, because I hear this every time that Cam and I go before the board of supervisors or we talk to city councils, they say, well, it doesn't affect me, so I don't really care what anyone does. I said, but it does affect you. It affects everybody in your community. And what? Are you going to wait till you lose a loved one before you go, what the heck? What have we done? How did we allow this to happen? You know, don't let that be the next story you have to tell. So there's my 2 cents.
It's true, though. It's the same thing.
It's true.
So when your son was killed, did they go after, I mean, obviously?
Obviously, you know, the attorney we hired, he did. He had to look at, you know, they do, what do they call that, tracing to see where the alcohol came from and stuff.
Oh.
Now, keep in mind, at the time, I wasn't of sound mind to inquire anymore. I didn't really want to know, other than the driver did get sent to prison. But, you know, it's just a tragedy. When it comes to marijuana, I just get so angry because we have let this industry into our communities.
We're promoting it.
And we're promoting it.
We didn't just let it in.
Yeah.
We're promoting it.
Yeah.
It's on the radio. There's billboards.
Yeah.
There's all this stuff.
And yet we don't hold them accountable for anything. For nothing. So,
Laura, during our last Board of Supervisors meeting, I highlighted the two new supervisors who are pushing cannabis advertising, and one of them took cannabis money. And when I called them out, they got extremely angry. And I had put up a picture of one of our local 15-year-old students, Shasta High students, who was killed by her friend, who was a marijuana DUI. And the supervisor at the end of my speech objected to my speech and said that I was grandstanding.
Called us grandstanding.
Called us grandstanding, that we were showing the death of this student whom Kathy and I had just gone to visit her grave. So that's what you're up against in California. However, California is slightly different states than Colorado, because we are the most litigious state in the United States, and there is a case now winding through our judicial system out of San Diego where a girl got high potency THC honey oil from a dispensary, vaped it, and had hyperemesis to the extent that she died from just repeated vomiting, aspirating on herself. Okay, so that case, the dispensary has been sued, and that case is winding its way through the court system. I think once you see those cases start to be successfully prosecuted by civil attorneys, you're going to see a floodgate of cases open up in California where people...
Well, I mean, I sure hope so. It's one of those things where it's almost because the federal government isn't involved, you know, it's, quote, states' rights, that everyone is just kind of out there, you know, on an island expecting to do this on their own. It's, you know, when we had all the hearings for tobacco, you know, that was a national thing. I mean, that was heard in Congress. You know, I still can picture in my head those tobacco executives holding up their hands swearing, you know, that it wasn't addictive. You know, and so
I
don't know.
And how did that work out? Yeah.
Right, but and it's the same thing, though. How many years did we have to go through that before we finally recognized that this was a problem, that this was an issue?
They're going to have to take it on nationally somehow.
Well, and sadly, in today's world, things move a lot faster than they did back then. And so you are seeing an industry that is I mean, they are on the racetrack because they know it's going to catch up with them and it's going to bite them in the ass.
Oh, and right now they're just making, you know, trying to make as much as they can before they get clamped down on, because they will.
Right. And the states aren't, and quit it. And I just want to, I just, anyone that says, oh, we're going to bring in all this tax money. No, we are not going to make any money. You and I going to make any money.
No, you lose so much more with crime and crashes and poison control and behavioral health and ER visits and on and on and on. I mean, there's no money to be made in this.
No. No.
Laura, you were a very successful business person before this, and then all of a sudden now you have the left turn of your life with the pain of Johnny's loss. How did it affect your life, and then how did that bring Johnny's Ambassadors about?
That's a good question. Well, yes, before this happened, I had spent my career as a professional speaker, as an expert in time management and productivity. I traveled over 2 million miles, as was mentioned in the introduction, flying and speaking and talking and writing. I had 8 previously published books about productivity. So I already knew branding and events and conferences and how to create national scale and social media and how to work with the large, you know, papers and shows. I already had all that in my toolkit. So it was, you know, in a way, I feel like this is what I was always supposed to be doing, that, you know, I was given Johnny for 19 years, and, you know, I was uniquely positioned to just pivot, just to stop working in the field I was working in and start a nonprofit educating parents and teens about the dangers of high THC marijuana and just telling Johnny's story. And sharing his warnings, sharing what I'd learned, sharing the research. We weren't planning to start a nonprofit. It just, during COVID, I was writing his story more for myself at first, just healing. But then I started posting little bits on Facebook, because I have a very large following on Facebook from my previous work. And one of the posts, I simply said, do you know what dabbing is? And I put in some links and told a little bit about my son, and it went viral. And it got 21,000 shares. It's still on my Facebook page. It's crazy. And there were about 5,000 comments, and they all were of the same theme of, I'm so sorry. I don't know what you're talking about. What is this? And we realized very quickly in just the small little posts that we were doing that, everywhere, parents were like me, completely uneducated and absolutely bowled over by all these products, not even knowing that they existed. And I have a friend who's on a board of a nonprofit, and she said, well, looks like you need to start a nonprofit, and I'll be on your board. And so she was the first one who kind of educated me about that. I knew nothing about nonprofits. I had been in a for-profit, but I very quickly found I already had the skills to run a nonprofit, that it wasn't that much difference. The only difference is where the money's coming from, right?
Sure.
Instead of me charging clients, I have my hand out. And I did, and the money came in. And we started Johnny's Ambassadors with the goal of providing free educational materials to schools. And that's mostly what we do. We take donations by way of program fees, licensing fees for some of our classes, for example. But then we turn around and we create stuff and we give it to the schools. So we give out thousands and thousands of copies of a 16-page prevention magazine that we have printed for middle school and high school students with a teacher guide. We give them PowerPoint and curriculum to use in health classes and PE and in the schools. We have built an online suspension alternative. Johnny would continually get suspended from school for marijuana use and would get an MIP, and you know, it was basically just a free week of vacation. So we said, you know, we're going to build something so that when kids get caught using marijuana at school, they can actually go through an educational process. And so now it's being used in drug courts and diversion and in schools and in-school suspension to keep them from getting suspended. And, you know, they have to turn in a certificate of completion. It's all online, self-paced. So these are the kinds of things that now we produce, webinars, toolkits, videos. I mean, so much information that is free. It's absolutely free. Anybody who goes to our website can get this education at no cost. And that was my dream, was just to be a resource to people, because there was nothing. There was nothing there for me when I was trying to find out what the heck was happening to my son.
And Laura, you launched a national forum on your website, and I frequent that forum with you, and I get to hear firsthand stories from multiple parents across the United States looking for help, and then also some of them share the same issues that you had with suicidality and their kids dying.
Sadly, hundreds of kids now. The stories are heartbreaking. We have currently 470 parents in our monthly support group whose children are in cannabis-induced psychosis right now all over the U.S., and that's just our little nonprofit, almost nearly 500 that I know of. And their stories are all vaguely similar, you know.
And Laura, you've become an expert in cannabis, because I've listened to you many times speak about the actual scientific parts of cannabis and how it affects the human brain and the
amygdala. That's not something I ever wanted to learn, but I've had to.
I have a question for you, Laura, real quick. When you go before schools or parent groups, do you get any pushback? Do you get any pushback from parents that think that they know more than you and they don't want you to
speak? Just not a big deal.
Yeah. And they don't see it as a big,
I never have. I think those parents don't come.
Oh, okay.
To the event, you know, because they don't actually want to have a conversation with me.
Well, and your husband's a black belt and stuff, so there's that.
Well, I just want you to know, because I run into issues. You know, we have to be very careful when we go on school campuses about the subject matter that we talk about, because those kids are going to go home and say, oh, do you know what I learned in school today? And then they get complaints from
parents. We tell them to go tell their parents exactly what they learned, and they get a letter to the parent before I come in, and they can choose not to attend the assembly if they wish. You know, some parents sadly don't know how how it changes their brain development, and it's very unfortunate, but some parents are buying marijuana for
right.
their kids.
Right.
Or growing it and using their
yeah.
kids as
thinking right. it's helping them, smoking together so they can bond, you know, I mean, just the crazy
right.
things I
right.
hear.
Or making their kids trim for them.
Mm-hmm. And they are
no shortage
their
of
child.
Bad parenting. Gosh, that's one thing that really is pretty consistent, isn't it? We've got to take a really quick break, but we will be right back. And we're speaking with Laura Stack from Johnny's Ambassadors. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Bury me in satin, lay me down on a bed of roses, sink me in the river at dawn, send me away with the words of a love song. Uh-oh, uh-oh. Lord, make me a rainbow, I'll shine down on my mother. She'll know I'm safe with you when she stands under my colors, oh, and laughing. What you think it ought to be, no, ain't even gray, but she buries her baby, the sharp knife of a short life. Well, I've had just enough time.
Now where?
So every year.
There's just so much, but.
Every year, both Kathy and Laura, you know, have to deal with this death.
Yes.
And this pain never changes. And I feel it from Kathy every year, and I feel it from Laura every year. And I wonder, Laura, it's never gotten better, but you've dealt with it, and you've moved forward in life with Johnny's Ambassadors. And tell us how that development of Johnny's Ambassadors, where's it going, and what's your future hopes? Where do you see it in 5 years?
Wow. Well, that's a lot.
Can you do that in 30 seconds or less?
No, I agree with you. You know, when I started Johnny's Ambassadors, I mean, I was in so much just raw anguish and anger, really, just, you know, furious, just, you know, how can this happen? And it's changed. I think it's changed through the years just in terms of the tone. It's not, I mean, yes, I'm still angry about it, but the work we're doing has really helped me heal. Like, I see people who use our resources, our groups, our support, who come and find out what's happening, and they're able to intervene, and they're able to change the course of what would have happened to their child, and it's saving lives. You know, it really is. I get letters and notes and comments and Facebooks, you know, every day from people. We just got the biggest grant we've ever received. We got a $50,000 donation from a woman whose son was saved because of Johnny's Ambassadors. So, you know, I know that we're making a difference and that we're changing lives, and that helps me personally. Like, I would highly recommend if someone has had a trauma or you know, something happened in their lives that is that needs to be fixed, that needs to be shared, that they be the one to do it. You know, that you do it. You know, don't always be waiting for someone else to fix this or come up with a solution. And I became very vocal, and we've been on Dr. Phil and in People magazine, and I feel like we're moving the needle. It's a very different tone I think we're getting through. I feel like people are becoming more aware of this just in the past few years, and some really huge media hits help. And then, you know, being able to go and read the book and read the whole story, and but more importantly, read the research. You know, we have 176 scientific notations. This is not just anecdotal. These are peer-reviewed, you know, scientific journals and very prestigious journal articles that talk about psychosis and mental illness and a sevenfold increase in suicidality and all of these new studies that are available. And there are no studies that show there's any benefit in any of these high THC products, particularly for youth. None of it is. There's no positive.
Right.
And no one's been able to show me any studies that show any value.
But we don't talk about that.
Yeah. Oh, no. We can't talk about that. But, you know, I think it's we have over 100 trainers now. You know, John and I, my husband, John is an unpaid volunteer. He's my hero. He works really, really hard and doesn't take a dime. And I'm the only paid staff member. And we're on the road. We leave Mondays. We fly out Monday. I speak at 3 schools or 2 schools and a parent night on Tuesdays. We fly on Wednesdays, 2 schools and a parent night on Thursdays. And we fly home Fridays. And then we have 2 days to get reorganized and unpacked and packed, and we hit it again. And that's what we do full time. We're on the road, and we have other trainers who are out doing the same thing. And that's just really what we're trying to do, is to get the word out, to make just a dent, you know, and to make a lot of noise and to sound the alarm and just refuse to be quiet about it. I will never just walk away quietly and just let this go. I get death threats. I get hate mail.
God, Laura, do we understand?
We totally understand. I was going to say.
Oh, you guys get it. Yeah, you get it, too.
Man.
You understand.
But you
I
know
had
what?
I had some guy deliver pizzas to our house the other day. It was like, why would you? That's so weird. Why is that? Like, pizzas. Poor Domino's guy. You know, standing out there with 6 pizzas that we didn't order. Just crazy, crazy people who are so defensive of their, you know, quote, medicine. And they're nasty and mean and vile, and they swear.
This is the way I looked at it when we were fighting this in 2012 in our community. I said, think about this. Really, really think about why these people get angry. You're taking away their money.
Yep.
You're taking away their money train.
Yeah, or their drug, yeah.
Right. And so, yeah. I mean, if somebody came to me and all of a sudden, you know, emptied my bank accounts, I'd be angry too. You know, come on. That's just the way it is. That doesn't make it right.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the perspective they're coming from. And they obviously use their product a lot.
The other thing that we fight, too, Laura, and I know you fight this as well, is a very, very liberal media today in the U.S. And for us, it's very difficult for us to get the message out, which is why we started our own news service. So, and Kathy and I, we formed SCAM, Shasta, Siskiyou, and Lassen County Citizens Against Marijuana. This multi-county coalition. We don't take money from anybody, and I don't raise money either. So we don't have to be beholden to anybody, and we don't have to declare ourselves to the IRS, and it allows us freedom to be able to say what we want, you know, within reason and limits. Now, one of the things I've noticed about you and your organization is that other organizations, like-minded organizations, have aligned themselves with you, like Dr. Finn from the International Association of Doctors Advising on Cannabis. And Dr. Finn, by the way, has a great video on obtaining a medical marijuana card in 60 seconds.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Yeah,
he's great. He's on our scientific advisory board. He was one of the very first people that I found and asked to be on my board. He actually created Isaac as a result of seeing what we did with our scientific advisory board, how I had gathered a bunch of doctors together, how I was doing a free webinar series during COVID. Every week I invited a doctor on, Sir Robin Murray, Marta DeForti, you know, very famed cannabis researchers, doctors, chemists, psychiatrists. I just had this wonderful series, and he wrote me and he said, I'm going to steal what you're doing if that's okay. You know, I love what you're doing. Can you introduce me to all of your speakers? We're going to do the same thing as doctors. And so I was really pleased to be involved with the kind of germination of that group who now, you know, they're putting ads in the Wall Street Journal. You know, doctors warn. There was just one in the Hill yesterday. Doctors warn about the increase in suicidality from using THC products, you know, so The more the merrier. You know, we've got to get all these groups involved. You know, we're a little different because we just focus on youth. And I think that's one of the reasons why we've been able to keep so much attention away from ourselves. We don't talk about adult issues. We also don't talk about, you know, hysteria kinds of things. And things that, you know, people get all riled up about. We just stay focused on children and teens. How do we prevent youth in our youth? And we stay focused on education.
Right.
We stay focused on awareness.
Right.
And I think that not by not throwing ourselves in the fray, that we're able to kind of rise above it. Even the pro-marijuana people won't directly come out and say, yeah, we think kids should use pot. They don't say that. But they think it, but they won't actually say it in public. And so they kind of leave us alone. So I think that was the best strategy that we had. I got that advice actually from an executive director who works in child pornography, against child pornography, and they said, you can't take down the entire pornography industry because there always will be adults who partake in that. But you can take down child pornography because nobody thinks there should be child pornography except the perverts and the ones who are creating the mess. And so I kind of took that to heart, and I think that that's a really good focus. We just stay focused on youth, and I think that has really served us.
I think when Cam and I, when we go before the Board of Supervisors, that's always my messaging. It always goes down to the youth in our community. And when we started going before the Board of Supervisors, 3 years ago? Something like that, when we started talking about the illegal grows going on here in Shasta County. You can still bring it down to the youth of your community, the easy access, et cetera, et cetera. And I remember Cam in the beginning, he goes, I just don't think we're making a difference. And he got a little boo-hoo-y and a little depressed. I'm like, no. I said, every time you go before the Board of Supervisors, look at it as an opportunity to educate not only the Board of Supervisors, but everybody that is either there in the audience or watching. This is our 3 minutes to get our point across. So
yeah, and it gets my home shot at, and me assaulted, and me threatened, and so that's what goes on with the marijuana crowd.
Okay? Yeah, I mean, I get
really tolerant,
you know, emails every day saying, you know, you've got blood on your hands, you're a terrible parent.
Oh yeah, yeah, we were accused of killing babies.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Laura, could you tell me, and this is personal, could you tell me about the pressures that this applied to you, your marriage, your husband, your other kids, and if faith played a process in your healing?
Well, I mean, it was very hard for my kids, especially. Now, my daughter is 5 years older than Johnny, and so she grew up more of an authority figure to him. She was his babysitter when we'd go to the movies, you know. Our son was 16 months younger, so they were very close, and, you know, very good friends, best friends growing up. It was just easier to put them in the same activities. So they played baseball together and soccer together and karate together.
Yeah, the pictures, they
could be the same kid. Yeah, that was a really efficient time saver right there. A nod to my other profession. You know, and they, Johnny was kind of the real smart, you know, robotics and programming in Java and, you know, just his interests in chess and just very intellectual pursuits started to branch off from our younger son's interest, who was athletic and really wanted to play D1 baseball. So they kind of grew apart, but not in terms of how much they loved each other. They just had different activities that they got involved in middle school. But it was very hard on our younger son. You know, he had a really difficult time with the loss of his big brother. And in many ways, I think he knew more than we did. What was going on in high school, because we were so in the dark. But he lived it, and he saw it, and felt the pressure, and you know, people calling him, wanting him to get his brother to hook him up with this or that, and just having to see that from his lens. It was very difficult for him. But he is much better. He's better. He's recovered. He's graduated from Colorado State University. He's got a great job with Charles Schwab next summer. He's moving to Austin. Our daughter found the love of her life, got married a year and a half ago, and just on February 8th had our first grandson.
Yay.
So there's a lot of joy, and it's funny because Johnny's birthday is February 7th, and she went into labor on Johnny's birthday. So we thought that was pretty amazing, you know, just kind of feeling like Johnny's still up there directing things, of saying, you know, I'm here, pay attention, in little ways that he shows up and continues to make things very, very easy. Dr. Phil called me. You know, I've not really had to do anything. It's been super easy, actually. I work hard. Don't get me wrong. I work as hard as three people. But it's all just kind of been a path that we just follow. And it's all falling into place. My husband works so hard. He handles all of our projects and shipping and books and logistics and all of our exhibits, conferences that we go to, all of our travel. He's an excellent travel manager. You know, I just talk to the schools and they invite me to come, and then he takes over. He does the hotels and the ground transportation, and he's amazing. Everybody would be jealous. Everybody needs somebody like him to organize their lives for them. But I think it's made us stronger.
Grandma Laura, after we come back from a break, perhaps you will let me talk a little bit about my trainee, JT. You're familiar with this story. And for people who think that, this only happens to weak people, maybe I'll just briefly relay it. It doesn't diminish anything that you've told us today.
No, I'd love that. No. It's a great story.
It's hitting everybody, and it is something worth becoming smarter about, actually. So by way of that, we do have a page on our website labeled POT. Nice, short, easy. It's right there on the top of the website at wethepeopleradio.us. There's a POT page. And on there, you have all the shows we've done on this, into the details of some of the science and stuff with Dr. Stuart Reese and the cancer connection and all of that. So if you don't care about the social connection, if you don't care about kids, if you don't like any of that, but, you know, you think that maybe using hemp shampoo is healthy for you, or giving CBD to your dog's a good idea, you really ought to listen to those shows. Because, that's not a good idea. Actually, it's a very bad idea. Johnny's Ambassadors is linked up. We've got the connection with school shooters and terrorists and mass killers, and how many of them are using marijuana at 99%. And Isaac and all the things that we've referenced. So, you know, if you're not listening to this with a pen in your hand, you can go there and cheat. We're going to make it easy for you. So in a nice hat tip to one of our callers, we thought we should play something about money. From all the greed that goes with this, we're going to hit that right away. We'll be right back with our guest, Laura Stack.
It's a rich man's world.
since today was a lot of physical humor made for TV, not radio, we do have to tell our listeners that there was some hula going on during that song.
There was.
It might have been happening, but Cameron might have been having a little hula episode there.
Hold it, you guys. Laura, they don't understand that, you know, I grew up on
I was impressed.
I grew up on the East Coast. I grew up, and I went to Woodstock. You're looking at an original Woodstock.
I grew up, like, right near you, and I didn't know Woodstock happened until I was in college.
Oh, my God.
I told you what my family was doing.
We had a farm in Claryville, New York, that was my summer place, 2,400 acres. It had been our family for 150 years, and we used to go there every summer. And so this one summer I was there, and this thing called Woodstock happened, and it's about maybe, I don't know, 45 minutes away from our farm. So I went there. And
you did?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we went there, and we only stayed one day because it was...
Oh, well, that makes it all better.
Well, it took three...
How old were you?
I'm not going to tell you, but I was very young.
Because aren't we the same? How old are you?
We're the
same. 61.
Shh.
Okay,
don't
give
any personal information, please.
He's older than I am?
Yeah,
okay.
I'm older than you. Yeah. So we it took us a day to get there. We stayed about a couple of hours, and it took us 2 days to get out of there.
That was a mob.
The New York State Thruway was closed, and cars were just abandoned everywhere.
Oh, I thought you were kidding. It took you 2 days to get out.
Oh, it really did.
Like you were actually trying to get out?
Yes.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. We were off-roading in a four-wheel drive. Anyway, that's my history.
Huh?
Coming back to the damage of cannabis, I'm going to briefly describe what happened to my my good friend and trainee, JT, 31 years with the largest sheriff's department in the United States. Very distinguished. When you take a person and you make them into a policeman, you have them for a half a year, and you get inside their head, and you're basically married to them. And he and I had worked a very busy place together. We had had a number of deadly confrontations that we successfully came through, many, many vehicle pursuits, handled hundreds of calls together. And I had to teach this person how to be a policeman and go through this whole stack of things he had to learn, like 1,500 things that I had to sign him off on and say that he was acceptable to be a policeman. So after that, we split and we went in different places in our career, but every couple of years we'd come back together, and you never forget your training officer, and you never forget your trainee, because they're representative of who you are and what kind of policeman that you've made for the rest of the world. So JT went through his entire career, decided he was going to stay in patrol as a patrol officer for 31 years, and that is very unusual. He ended his career with lots of injuries, and when he retired, he called me, and we would talk every day, Laura, and he would ask me, you know, what's it like being retired, and I would explain to him that he needed to get something to do and find something positive in his life. And with his injuries, he started to medicate with traditional pharma drugs, and they gave him some pretty strong drugs because he had a lot of injuries from getting into a really serious car accident. So after about a year, he didn't talk to me for a couple of months, and he came back and started saying crazy things to me. The Hell's Angels are chasing me.
Oh, boy. I know where that's going.
Yeah. My neighbors are shining lights in my windows. He sent me pictures. He cut all the trees down between his and his neighbor's home. He was to the point where I was concerned about his welfare and safety, and I found out that one of his friends called me, and then his family called me and said, JT's using high-potency THC, and he had gone to a dispensary, and the bud tender there said, oh, if you have pain, take this. And very quickly, within about 90 days, he was severely addicted. And within a half a year, he was psychotic. And tried initially to get him some help. I wrote what's called a 5150 on him, which is danger to self, danger to others, or gravely disabled, an actual police report. I was retired at that time, but I contacted the department and said, it's time to take his gun and his badge away from him. He's a danger to the community. He would get on the freeway and drive at 100 miles an hour, just crazy stuff like that. The department finally responded, and he was very, you know, he's a policeman, so he told the paramedics what they wanted to know, and they released him. But it kept getting worse and worse and worse. And then his family finally called me and said, hey, he's threatening us. We're going to get a restraining order against him. He said he wants to come at night and kill us. And At that point, the department finally did do something. They did take his badge and gun, and he got hospitalized. Now, he was a veteran, so he went into the VA. They kept him for 2 weeks. He should have been there for probably 12 months, but they kept him for 2 weeks. He got sober for a while, Laura, and I think you probably experienced this with Johnny, if I recall. And he did, and he got better. He was okay. And
yeah.
we talked about the future. And then I noticed that his mood got very black again. And a day before his death, he stopped talking to me. And I called him. I gave him a guitar. He was a very good musician. I had given him a guitar, and I used to like to talk to him about music. And he didn't take my call. And I became very concerned. And so I called his family, and his family became very concerned. They couldn't go over to his house because they were afraid of him. But we had the department respond, and two deputies broke the door down, and they found that he had laid in his bed and had taken a knife and had cut his own throat from ear to ear. Now, I don't know what human being can do something like that and have any kind of sanity whatsoever. And when his body was taken to the morgue and they did an autopsy on him, his tissues were saturated with THC. So from that, I struggled for a while with what to do about it. A national police grieving group contacted me and wanted me to tell his story, and I couldn't do it. And that was, it's been a number of years, right? And finally this past year, his family said, you can tell JT's story. We want the world to know that if somebody can go through all the things that you have to go through as a policeman, all the psychological tests that you have to go through, evaluations that you have to go through constantly, all the drug tests that you have to go through constantly, that in the end, it can happen to the strongest people possible. Jeff was 225 pounds of pure muscle. I called him my Nordic god. I could point him like a pit bull at a suspect, and he would take the person out. I just have to stand there. And in the end of his life, he was emaciated, looked like a total dirtbag. I didn't even recognize him anymore. So I am left, and maybe you can, in this, I'm going to give you the rest of the show, Laura. Maybe you can address this, and Kathy can address this. I go through the what ifs all the time in my life, and I go, what if I had been there for him? He was 660 miles away from me. What if I had actually gone down there? Could I have done something differently? You know, did I fail him in some way? And I feel like, you know, I'm a normal, well-adjusted human being, so I understand I couldn't change the direction of another person's life. But still in the back of my mind, there's this little twinge I always have, like, what should I have done differently? And do you ever
I think that's normal. I mean, we all went through that. I'm sure Kathy did too. You know, John and I asked, you know, 200 times, you know, over and over again, and what if we would have done that, or should have done this, or should have done that. And, you know, we had to get to a point where down deep in our heart, you know, we knew it wasn't our fault. We did everything that we could for him. We tried everything. We did what we knew. You know, we didn't know what we didn't know, and we loved him. You know, it's always said, if it, you know, were a matter of love, they would still be here. And he, sadly, you know, didn't want to help himself, but the drugs took him. And you know, that's the sad thing about people who use. They don't think they have a problem.
Right.
Because
right.
They don't know they have a problem.
Right. That's the problem.
Exactly. And right. We just eventually knew it wasn't our fault.
But this is, it's not even the people that use the drug. It's us as a community. You sit here and go, I don't know what the problem is. And they don't even know what the problem is. So they just ignore it in our communities. Mm-hmm. And this is sad because it's killing our kids.
Yeah.
And, and not everyone's going to be like you or me and be able to turn such a tragedy into something positive, because that's not how most people react. You know, but
people just are quiet and
right.
shamed,
right.
And people try to shame you.
Well, and you just, because you don't even know what to do, and I guess, you know, I don't know. I still firmly believe that, you know, through the tragedy, you know, something good has to come, and whether that is saving, you know, your neighbor's son from doing something, you know, totally stupid, or just educating more people, you know, like, these are our kids. They deserve better from us.
Yeah.
What it gave me, Laura, is it gave me a deep burn in my life that will never go away, and I will never stop fighting to make the world better and have people be drug-free and understand the harms that they're doing to themselves and to everyone around them. You know, because suicide hurts everybody around. The person's gone. They don't feel any more pain, but it's everybody else that's left.
Well, I think even, you know, in the back of their mind somewhere, they do know it's harming them. Johnny would have moments of lucidity where he did know that it was harming him, and he told us that 3 days before he died. He was here at the house, and he said, "Mom, I just want you to know that you were right 5 years ago, you know, when you told me not to do it again. It would hurt my brain. It's ruined my mind and my life, and I'm sorry, and I love you." And he was very lucid, but I missed it. It probably was suicidal. And we share that warning with kids all over the U.S., you know, that we end with that. That marijuana ruined my mind and my life. And we love teens. I love teens, and I can't bear for any of them to follow his path or any families to go through what we've gone through, and you with your partner and Kathy and her son. It's just so... It's all bad. It's just tragic.
Well, my grandkids, and you're going to love this being a grandma, but my grandkids are older. So my youngest granddaughter is 12, and then my grandson will be 18 in May, believe it or not. But they know if they get into alcohol, drugs, anything like this, that the wrath of grandma... is nothing compared to what their parents would do to them. So I always say when I speak to groups, I always want to be that little person on their shoulder screaming in their ears going, "Oh my God, I remember that lady. I remember what she said. I can't do this."
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So, I do think of Johnny.
Laura, we've got about maybe a minute and a half left. What would you want to tell the world about this life travel for you, about Johnny's Ambassadors, and about the future for our country and our youth?
Well, I mean, I would just share that, you know, we are in prevention. That's what we do. We're in primary prevention, and talk to your kids early. One in 10 of our middle schoolers here in Colorado is addicted.
Yep.
You know, it's not too soon to talk with them when they're 10 and 11 and 12 about marijuana and its harms, and that there's no safe level of THC in their developing brains. We know from MRI studies that even one or two uses changes the development of the prefrontal cortex. There's zero safe use of THC, and we just want them to delay as long as they can, you know, 25 to 30 before their brains are formed, and maybe by then they won't want to use it all. You know, that's our hope. That we can educate them and share Johnny's warning, and not as a scare tactic, not as trying to make them sad. Don't do drugs. Drugs are bad. You know, we're not here to judge them, and I'm not their mom, but just to sound the alarm and share the warning. And when they are faced with a choice like Johnny, you know, here, hit this, that they make different choices than
yeah.
he did.
And that their parents are really strong about it. Start early and get tough about it, because this it's no big deal and it's better than alcohol is a massive lie. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for sharing your stories, you guys. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Laura.
Thanks, Laura. Thanks, Kathy.
You.
Thanks, Kim.
Thank you to all of you for having me.
We love you, Laura. Take care.
Thank you guys so much. Appreciate the opportunity to talk about Johnny and the harms. I hope the right people hear it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Laura.
Was abducted by aliens. You're going to catch this all commercial-free here this afternoon at WeThePeopleRadio.us.